Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Welcome back. You're listening to America This Week. I'm Carrie Weber, Executive Editor for America, and I'm joined today by Father Matt Malone, our Editor-in-Chief, and Zach Davis, one of our Assistant Editors. So for anyone who is not ever listened to this channel before, we'll introduce Jen Fulweiler, who's a writer, a speaker, and she's the host of the aptly named The Jennifer Fulweiler Show, airing daily here on SiriusXM, Channel 129. And she has a new book out, which hopefully you've already heard about, called One Beautiful Dream, The Rollicking Tale of Personal Passions, Family Chaos, and Saying Yes to Them Both. Jennifer Fulweiler, welcome to the show.
I am so glad to be here with you guys.
We are very glad to have you on the show. It's funny, we usually hear your voice as we're exiting the studio.
Because we're all in this serious, I feel like we're members of a family who never talk to each other.
That's right. Well, and you guys are used to seeing me rushing around when I'm there in New York, that we have 2 minutes between when your show ends and my show begins. It's like, so it's always, we're elbowing past each other. Hi, good to see you guys. Okay,
good to see you. All right, get out of my chair.
It's not unlike some family.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And you know, Father Matt, I actually thought that was a great segue, because anyone who is trying to balance, you know, putting God and family first, keeping your priorities in the right place, but still, you know, doing the work that you think God's calling you to do, it feels like a war a lot of days. I thought that was a great segue.
So tell us a little bit about this war that you're in the midst of then. Tell us what prompted this book in particular.
Yeah, so the reason I told this story is my first book was about my conversion from lifelong atheism to Catholicism. That was a bit of a ride there to go through that. So I had told that story, and a lot of people were asking, okay, so what happened next? That's a big transition. I mean, I was an absolute careerist, someone who thought that fulfillment and happiness can only be found in kind of a corporate style workplace. I didn't want a family. I did not want children. I was pro-choice, and I didn't even think you could be pro-contraception. I was like, isn't that like air or water? Like, everyone agrees this is an absolute necessity. And so a lot of people naturally asked, so how did that go when you became Catholic? I wrote this story to kind of answer the question of my new understanding of what fulfillment looks like. And I didn't write the book for only a Catholic audience. Even though it's a very Catholic story, I wrote it assuming that I'm speaking to people of all faith backgrounds and all different beliefs, to tell that story of, you know, going from thinking that fulfillment can only be found in a very individualistic, godless worldview, to just rethinking what the entire concept of, you know, having it all, to use the old term, just rethinking what that concept even looks like.
Right. So part of that revelation you write about in an excerpt that we have on our website at americamagazine.org/serious. The excerpt is titled on our site, "In the midst of angst about my family situation, these three words help me find peace." And I think the three words that you mention in this piece it's a wonderful example of a phrase that sort of sums up the transition that you made from that old viewpoint to the new one. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the phrase was actually coined by Sheldon Vonnegut. He wrote the classic memoir, A Severe Mercy. Beautiful, beautiful memoir. And this phrase was not coined in the memoir, but in some later writing he did. He coined the term wholeness of vision. Isn't that a great phrase?
Yeah.
Wholeness of vision. And he was specifically thinking of his late wife when she was only 14 years old. She had a crisis pregnancy. It was a very, very, very difficult situation for her and her family. Her father was a highly respected preacher. And this was back in the 30s or 40s. So you can imagine what a scandal that was. And he was just reflecting on how, on the one hand, he could respect what his wife had gone through at age 14. But later in his life, he actually connected with the daughter she ended up giving birth to and giving up for adoption. This woman was, at the time he knew her, was a nurse, had three children of her own, a beautiful woman. Sheldon Vonnegut never went on to have kids himself. He and his late wife did not have kids. And so this woman became his kind of surrogate daughter, and they had a very deep relationship. And so he wrote a very moving piece about how we often make our big life decisions based on the tyranny of the immediate, how it will impact my plans for this month and this year. And those are legitimate concerns, but we often miss the 10, 20, 30, 40 year vision, and we miss thinking about what we're really going to care about when it's all said and done. Sheldon was writing at the end of his life, he knew his time on this earth was drawing to a close. And so that's when he coined that term, wholeness of vision, and how important it is when we think of those things when we're making our big life decisions.
And it seems to me that in the digital world we're living in today, that the tyranny of the immediate, I mean, it's become like a Leviathan, right? I mean, we are, we're besieged constantly. Like, I was just talking to somebody this morning, I said, you know, who works in business, and I said, what is the one thing CEOs need? And he said, they need time to think. They need the time to think about the future. And then I was reading this article about, you know, the use of email, and was saying, you know, you got to get out of there. Look at it like twice a day, because if you look at it all the time, then what is immediate is what will drive you, right? And you won't be able to step back. And I can only imagine, not being a parent, that you know, that the press of events in daily family life must, you know, in the digital age must be even more difficult to navigate.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It absolutely is, Father Matt. But I would say people, you know, single people, I think, have their own pressures. Because I often laugh at Father Matt, and Carrie, you might be able to relate to this too, that when you're a parent, especially, you know, I've got six kids, people kind of give you a pass with a lot of stuff. They'll say, oh, I can't ask Jen to do that. She's got her six kids. But you, Father Matt, they're like, what's Father Matt doing? He can help me with this. He can be on this. And so I think that people who are single, people who have religious vocations, we all face this same pressure to let the tyranny of the immediate dictate our lives. And you know, I think that's what often leads to midlife crises. Certainly we have a culture of midlife crises in our country. And I think that a big part of that is you wake up one day, maybe you're in your 40s or 50s or 60s or whatever it is, and you realize, I have not been thinking with a wholeness of vision. I've been making all of my life decisions based on the tyranny of the immediate. And I think that is absolutely what fuels midlife crises.
And this phrase sort of came over you and gave you some peace while you were pregnant with your fourth child, correct?
Correct.
Could,
yes.
Could you talk a little bit about the anxiety you were feeling at the time?
Yeah. So, you know, I often joke that when my husband and I converted to Catholicism, we did a ton of research. We really got on board with the view of family planning through natural family planning. But, you know, we missed the classes. I mean, we were already married. We already had kids when we converted. So we were terrible at it. I mean, terrible. We, you know, there are all these different methods like Marquette method and Creighton. We used the Fulweiler guesstimation method that has an accuracy rate of like 60%. And so I very quickly learned that God's timing is sometimes not our own timing. And so I was reflecting on this idea that this particular situation, obviously I loved the child. I was grateful, so grateful to have another child coming into our family. But I had some medical issues I was dealing with as part of my pregnancy. And it just felt like the wrong time. And I think it's important in Catholic culture, especially those of us who, you know, we're into the pro-life movement. I mean, we think this is important. Sometimes I think in Catholic culture in particular, we hesitate to admit, yeah, you know what? I am freaked out about this positive pregnancy test. I'm really worried about this. This feels like really bad timing to me. And that's one of the reasons I wrote this book and that chapter in particular, to just share that honest experience of being someone who is Catholic, recognizes the beauty of family life and of children and all of that. But that doesn't preclude saying, hey, this was stressful to me. This felt like bad timing, and I was struggling with it. So that was why I shared that, you know, fairly intimate story in that chapter.
Yeah, it's tough because I think it can feel, there's a fear often that it will come across as a lack of gratitude or a lack of love,
right,
for the child, or some other part of you is lacking, when there's really just, you know, the tension or the nervousness that you might have around any big change in your life. And that's normal and that's natural.
Exactly, Carrie. And yeah, and I think so many women especially are afraid to say this in Catholic culture because, yeah, it feels like you're saying, I hate babies.
Right.
You know, if you say, right. I got a positive pregnancy test and it kind of feels like this is the wrong time.
Right.
Right, exactly. Right.
That's actually how Queen Victoria did it. She just came out and said that.
That's true. Well, that's one route.
Right, exactly.
So, Jen, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that, that yes, right? That sense of wanting to be there for your family and wanting to pursue something else that was part of your creative passions. And we were talking before the break a bit about the pressure that a lot of women feel to behave a certain way as a Catholic mother. I wonder how that extended to the way you saw your work and life balance.
Yeah, Carrie, I love that question. So coming into Catholicism, you know, I was always sort of the A student in school. I always needed to get the highest grade on the test. And I very much brought that mentality into being not just Catholic, but being a Catholic mother. I was going to get an A plus in Catholicism. And so I very much, very quickly adopted all of these ideas of what I thought a quote-unquote good Catholic mother did. And so I didn't pursue any of my passions. I didn't even look into hobbies or things like that because I knew from the blogs that real Catholic mothers who actually care about their families, they're doing the glitter crafts and they're making replicas of Notre Dame Cathedral, you know, with their children with toothpicks. But yet I found myself with this sense of a lack of fulfillment. And ultimately, and this is one of the big things I chronicle in One Beautiful Dream, I realized that surprisingly enough, that idea that I absolutely had to shut down my personal passions if I were going to be a quote unquote good Catholic mother, that actually stemmed from my old atheist individualism, that I still thought of my passions and the work that I do in this one box way over here. And then family life is in this other box way over here. And I realized after talking to a priest that that's not really how God intends for things to be. And in a truly family-focused view in which you're connecting with your family and in your community, you can share your passions with the people you love. This does not have to be an either-or thing. And so the second half of the book is really about me learning how to bring my family into my passions and vice versa. And in fact, Carrie, now I'm going to be living this out because for my book tour, we're starting with 9 cities on the East Coast, and I am bringing all 6 of my children. So I'm really living out the message of the book.
Do you have like an RV or something exciting like that?
No, nothing that classy. It's going to be 2 rental cars, and we're going to be on the road for almost 3 weeks. 6 kids. I'm doing my show every day. I'm doing all these book tour stops. So if I don't die, it will be a great witness
great
to
adventure.
The message of my story.
Sure. Like,
you might get another book just out of
this.
Yeah, exactly.
Plenty of stories for the show.
Jen, could you talk a little bit about that integration of bringing your passions into your family and your family into your passions? That sounds like it could be messy.
Very, very messy. And, you know, that's the thing is I used to think that if I am going to pursue a calling that is outside of family life, for example, for me, what I talk about a lot in the book is writing. That's my background. I'm a writer by passion and by work background. And so I really used to think that the only thing I could possibly do with that is some sort of traditional job or, you know, something like that. And what I found is that I could bring this in to my family life, but it does involve sacrifices. The analogy I use in the book that was given to me by this priest is this idea of thinking of yourself and the people God has sent into your life. You know, if you're in religious life, it might be your community. If for those of us who have families, it's our families, is thinking of yourself as being part of a symphony orchestra. So, you know, you can use your talents. You're actively using the instrument that God has given you. You're putting your work out there, but you are doing it as part of a greater whole. And so that means you don't get to be a soloist all the time. You know, I have had to turn down pretty cool opportunities because they didn't work in the context of my family life. But on the other hand, there are other opportunities where I say, okay, you know what? I'm going to do this book tour and kids just come along with me. Right. And so it's a constant balancing act. And a lot of times it feels messy. It feels like you're not doing it right. You know, there's no one size fits all answer here.
Right. Do you have advice for people whose work is maybe not, or their passions aren't in the creative field? So writing is something that is really, really difficult, and you need very specific sometimes mentality or place to do it, but it has a degree of flexibility to it that, say, if your passion is architecture or engineering,
right,
or a lab scientist, like, they don't necessarily let six kids into the lab. So yes. do you have advice for someone whose passions don't necessarily align with that kind of flexibility?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it all starts with bringing your family into your work in whatever way you can. Something I touch on a little bit in the book is that my husband, Joe, is an attorney. And so, you know, people don't really like to have six kids sitting there in their depositions, oddly enough. And
So
for a while, I kind of thought, well, that's in sort of a whole separate realm. That's a different message. But what we found is Joe started bringing us into the work that he's doing. And while we didn't go into the details of his legal briefs or anything, he would talk to us about his goals. And if he had an opportunity come up and say, okay, I could take on this case, but it would mean a whole lot of extra work. But on the other hand, I'm really passionate about helping this person with their cause. And we would think through that decision together as a family. And I think, Carrie, a lot of women especially, we are so trained almost by the world around us to feel guilty about anything we ever do in our careers or with our hobbies or whatever, that I think sometimes we almost feel like we're rats who have to scurry off into a corner, you know, to do anything
right
with our career, and then go, you know, shamefully accept the promotion at work or whatever. But my message to anyone, whether your work is creative or it's more corporate, is to break down those walls separating your career from your family and call a family meeting. Say, hey, my boss says I might be in line for a promotion to vice president at my job. What do you guys think? I mean, what are the trade-offs here? Should I take it? And then you can do all of this guilt-free because you know, you've talked to your family about this. You know how they feel about it. And you know that you're approaching this with a team mentality, even if your family is not literally involved in the day-to-day work that you do.
What's that been like for your children, being part of that decision-making process?
They, you know, it's interesting. It's really energizing to them. Kids very often are, I think they feel left out of the adult's world. Mm. And my kids just feel so important and energized when I say, hey, what do you think? Like with this book tour, Zach, I wanted to do the book tour, but I said, you know, I'm not going to do this if the family's not on board. It's going to be a lot of travel. You know, if they either can't come with me or don't think it's a good idea, then I won't do the book tour. And that's just one of the sacrifices that I will have to make as a, you know, person who's trying to put family first. But they got really excited about it. And then they heard me and my husband discussing logistics. So not only does it add kind of a burst of energy to our family life, but I think it's also training our children to be good decision makers. They heard my husband and I talking about money. What does the financial picture look like? What is the payoff? And so I think they're getting some good real world training being part of these discussions.
And I think there's a tendency that's, you know, good inclined for parents to sort of like shelter their children from those types of very practical and heavy decisions. I feel like that was certainly my experience growing up, but
yeah,
that makes a lot of sense to be able to have your children not only advocate for what they think, but also learn to listen.
Yeah. And Zach, you know, one of the things I talk about that I think is very interesting is that we are in the middle of a big cultural shift. And I think that our mentality about work and family life is taking a while to catch up. Because, for example, my grandparents, their early adulthood was during the Great Depression, where there weren't a lot of jobs to go around. A lot of the jobs that were out there were very difficult. You know, so back in the days when the average person, their job was maybe, you know, working at the local coal mine or working in a factory, that was just a different scenario where you didn't have a lot of options. There just weren't a lot of opportunities. And so I think work really was kind of a falling on the sword type of experience. Like, all right, we're trying not to starve to death here. So dad's going to go work in the coal mine and he's going to just try to get through that and bring home whatever money he can. And so work was almost always a pretty sacrificial experience. But we're in a new era now, you know, thanks to connectivity and the internet, there are all sorts of different ways to make money, ways to provide for your family and maybe even use some gifts that you enjoy using. And I think that we're still kind of stuck in the old world mentality of our grandparents. And we need to kind of rethink how we think about work and specifically how work fits into family life.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because you just got me thinking. I'm one of six children myself. And I remember my father actually rather deliberately at different points taking each of us or some group of us to his workplace and, you know, us spending the day there. And
oh, I love that.
I remember that being like really important because I think as a kid, you just naturally think, you know, is this place where my parent goes for 8 or 9 hours a day more important than I am? Right. Because, yeah. Right. And so like, yeah, I guess now that I think about it, I guess I never really thought about this before, but, you know, him bringing us there was an important moment, you know, in which to say, I'm bringing this, you who are so important to me into this other thing that is important to me, but it somehow communicated something very important.
Yeah. And it sort of demystifies it.
Yes.
And it makes it clear that this is, you are part of this, that this is not
right.
Some separate thing where he severs his connection to his family as soon as he walks in the door of his office. Right.
Right. Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. I love your work, I must say. You know,
and oh, thank you.
I think you're like the Irma Bombeck of our time.
Oh, that's awesome. Wonderful.
And my mother was a great fan of Irma Bombeck. I still remember the grass is always greener over the septic tank. It never left her bedside.
Well, that is a high, high compliment.
Indeed. Indeed. So now, how many different cities are you going to on this tour?
9, Father Matt.
Oh, my Lord. That is unbelievable.
Will you get a chance to show the kids some of those cities as part of the tour? Like, is there like a historical or entertainment element to this to kind of sell them on it other than there's a lot of parishes and bookstores? Or are they excited about the parishes and bookstores?
Well, Gary, I'm no fool. We are bringing our nanny. That's one of the things I talk about in One Beautiful Dream is I am unapologetic about having help. I think all people with families need to be more open to seeking out help, accepting help. So I am not doing this on my own. My husband will be there. Our nanny will be there. And so to be honest, Carrie, I will probably be working, like doing my show, doing these events in every city. But I do hope that my nanny might be able to take them and see the historical stuff. We've also had a lot of great volunteers offered to take them around. Like one of the events, I'm speaking at Harvard Square in Boston, and we've had some people volunteer to, you know, walk the kids around there and show them Harvard. And my husband went to Yale, so he might veto that.
Well, that is fantastic. Well, we want to make sure that you have a few minutes to freshen up before you go on the air.
Right. I have 6 minutes. It's fine.
It's like hours in radio time.
Right, exactly.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Sure it is. Jennifer, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, it's really been a pleasure. Thank you guys so much.
The book is One Beautiful Dream, The Rollicking Tale of Personal Passions, Family Chaos, and Saying Yes to Them Both. And you can read an exclusive excerpt from the book at americamagazine.org/serious. It's always a breath of fresh air to have Jennifer on the show, isn't it?
We were very glad to have her.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I always think I never have anything to say about these things because I'm not a parent.
Anything to say about anything?
Well, no. I have a lot to say about a lot. I got a lot more to say about the British Constitution, I can tell you that.
I have no doubt.
But then I realized, you know, actually, I was a kid. I do have some
most people have some element of family life in their own life, right?
And that's
absolutely valid, right? That there isn't. I was a much more confident parent before I actually became a parent.
Right.
Some things do shift, but I think it doesn't mean you can't have a perspective on it that's useful. You know, as Jennifer said, some of the most useful things that she's heard were, you know, one was from that priest who said you're part of a symphony, right? You don't.
Right.
Good advice for family life doesn't have to come only from people who have a certain type of family.
Carrie, do you have role models? who you look to for how to balance these things?
In terms of balancing these things? I mean, my own mother had to balance these things. And I think, I mean, it feels like a cop out in some ways because when you, anytime you mention your mother, but it, for most people, this is the person you look to, right? Which at the same time then puts so much pressure back on you. You're like, oh, I look to my mother and now my kids are going to be looking to me and what are they seeing? And I better do this right. You know, because you realize like how much influence your parents do have on you and the choices that you make. In some ways, you know, in those small ways are like, okay, well, today he ate goldfish crackers for dinner and he's not going to not go to college because of that.
Right.
But, you know, you got to have that right balance and try to live as that example. Because I think that's where kids do get their direction from.
Yeah, indeed you do. And, you know, I've met your mother. I know your mother. I think she's a pretty good role model.
I think so, too.
And I'm looking forward for you bringing the kids back to America's office, too.
Yeah. We look forward to that. You have been listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. You can read more about all of the stories that we touched on today at americamagazine.org/Sirius. You can also follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. And to subscribe to America, call 1-800-627-9533. That's 1-800-627-9533 for a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. For Carrie Weber and Zach Davis, I'm Father Matt Malone. Thank you and good day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.